Hello and welcome to another all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. It's the final episode of the off-season. We're going to do our Power 8 hot takes. We're going to go over some possibly stupid over-unders that we've come up with, and then we'll go through a few of our preseason standings predictions here. Matt, we don't take this Power 8 hot takes label lightly, do we?
No, we sure don't. And this is one of the best times of the year. The season's going to be here before we know it. And I think all off season, we're pretty analytical when it comes to breaking down these teams. We try to, I think, do a good job of giving fans reasons for excitement and have a generally positive outlook. But you know what? Half the team's got to lose. And today, I think the cold, hard truth comes out. And we've got some very hot takes about what's going to go down this season. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, well, I already know two fan bases are going to be grumpy about what I have to say. And they both have very similar colored jerseys. So that's the only hint that I will give here.
I mean, it's going to be more than two fan bases, but we'll say at least two. Is a guarantee.
Yeah, but like my teams in the bottom three are kind of just expected to be at the bottom three. And
yeah.
I don't think the St. Joe's fans are going to get angry that someone has them 13th or 14th at this point.
No, probably not. It's only fair. All right, so should we go ahead and get started then? Are we going with the Power 8 hot takes to kick things off?
I think we have to. We've already teased it. We got to start things off right then and there. Would you like to start here?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start it off, and we'll give a nod to the defending champions, well, defending regular season champions, the Davidson Wildcats, who you've seen a lot of different opinions about them this year. They lose a great coach, three starters, so who knows what's going to happen, but if there's one thing we've seen from Davidson year in and year out, this program produces superstars. And since joining the A-10, they've already had four conference players of the year, Tyler Kalinowski, Peyton Aldridge, John Axel Goodmanson, and then Luka Brajkovic last year.
None of them are Jack Gibbs or Kellen Grady either.
I know, but also first team guys, along with Hyungjin Lee. So they've had so many first team guys, so many players of the year. And so I don't know if this is, we'll start it with a kind of mild take, but this isn't a prediction. It is a guarantee that Davidson will have at least one player on the first team, whether it is Foster Lawyer, Sam Mananga, or a surprise pick. But I know it's not that bold considering Foster Lawyer was picked there, but you don't see a lot of people talking about Davidson's stars this year compared to the other teams. And I think it's almost a certainty one of those guys is going to be absolutely tremendous. And honestly, I think it might be Mananga.
Yeah, I mean, Foster Lawyer is on the preseason first team. I thought you were about to go with they're definitely getting two teams on the all-conference altogether. And I think that actually would have been even more mild than this. Because as we've talked about at length, there's just so much talent on this team. Someone else is going to break out next to Lawyer. So, basically, if they finish top five, then I can't see how you'd be wrong.
I mean, I think... So they just always have some of the best top end talent in the conference. And maybe I should amend it to say like between the first and second teams, they're going to have two players at least, just because it seems like that happens almost every year, whether it's even, you know, arguably deserved or not some of these years. But I think they're going to continue to be really good. We'll get into the rankings later, so I won't spoil more of my Davidson thoughts, but we'll start things off kind of mild.
All right, I'm going to go. I got three milds, two mediums, and three scorchers. And I actually probably should have gone first because I have one more. So I'll fire off two of my mild ones here back to back, and you can just kind of run with whichever one you find more fascinating. Number one, I think Fordham stays in the top four in the conference in defensive efficiency in KenPom. Dayton and VCU are just going to be spectacular on that end this year. And now you throw Loyola Chicago into the equation. They've been top 50 nationally I believe it's 5 years in a row. I gave that stat last week. I don't have it in front of me anymore. But Fordham was third last year. They lose their two best defenders, Josh Colon-Navarro and Chuba Ohams. But all we keep hearing about the new guys on Fordham is something that we haven't heard about the Rams maybe in our lifetimes. It's a lot of athletes coming to this team. Will Richardson, Khalid Moore, these guys that the first thing we're hearing about them is about their athleticism, about Will Richardson's speed. And the Rams just don't have that. The Rams haven't had stud athletes in a very, very long time. So maybe they're not quite the same level of discipline on defense, but I think that that athleticism paired with a lot of smart guys like Antrell Charlton, like Kyle Rose, it's going to keep them good on very, very good on the defensive end. And then my other pretty mild one, Noah Fernandes, top two in the conference in assists this year. UMass is another team that could be up there defensively. And Frank Martin just brought in a lot of hard-nosed guys. But what he's kind of lacking is creators and people who can really make things happen. I think that Noah Fernandes is going to be responsible for a lot offensively for that team, both scoring and passing the ball. I think he's easily clears six assists a game this year as just the primary usage guy for that team. I wanted to pick him to win it, and then it kind of dawned on me he could finish second in the A-10. He could finish second in the country and still not win the A-10 assists title. So I'll leave him at two.
Yeah, I feel like if you're picking someone top two in assists and it's not Yuri Collins, you're just picking them to finish second. But I like both those takes. I think when it comes to Fordham, they better stay in the top four in defense because their offense is still going to be pretty rough. And it was still bottom 70 last year, I believe. So they're going to have to bring the defense if they want to stay in the middle of the pack. But yeah, speaking of point guards, I can get into my next hot take, and this shouldn't come as a big surprise, but he's not the highest rated rookie, but I think Jason Nelson is this year's rookie of the year for the Richmond Spiders. And I will take it a step further and think next year he's on the first team as a sophomore. I just think Richmond has produced so many great point guards over the last 10 years, and I feel like playing behind or practicing behind Jacob Gilliard last year, being with a coach that knows how to develop these types of undersized players, I think he's going to thrive in Richmond's offense. So I think it could still be a little bit of a rebuild for the Spiders this year, losing so many cornerstones of their roster. But the future is still going to be pretty bright as long as they keep Nelson and some of these other young freshmen around.
So we don't discuss these beforehand, and it sometimes it leads to some very clunky segments. But I think it's better to just kind of go back and forth, hear it for the first time on the air. And this just worked out beautifully because my next one, my rookie of the year pick, is a different point guard from the state of Virginia, and that is Devin Dinkins of George Mason, who the more I just look at this Patriots roster, he's by far the most important guy to this team in terms of X factors in taking a leap. They're great from two to five offensively, flat out great. And everyone has said this over and over again. We're not making any new news to say that George Mason's point guards have to be better this year. But you look at the trio that's there. Ronald Polite proved himself to be a very solid backup last year. I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like he might be the opening day starter. I think by the end of the season, he's a nice 15 to 20 minute bench guy who just gives you some steady play. He is not a make you an A-10 contender level starter. So it's between Saquon Singleton and Devin Dinkins. Dinkins, I believe, was the lowest rated of everyone in George Mason's freshman class, but he's the guy that Kim English keeps talking about. He's hard-nosed point guard from the DMV, and just everything I read about him, I just like him more and more. I really like George Mason's potential this year. They cannot get there without Devin Dinkins, and I think he has the proper big season to put them in contention.
I think so. I like that pick a lot. And when it comes to figuring out who's going to be the best incoming freshman into the conference, I think what you have to look at is guys that have a chance for immediate playing time. And I would say that about both Dinkins and Nelson, where George Mason and Richmond both have holes at the point guard position that needed filled over the offseason. And look, with my pick with Jason Nelson, I think him having a rookie of the year caliber season keeps Richmond in the middle of the pack. If Devin Dinkins is the rookie of the year, George Mason might win the whole league. I think the rest of their team is that talented. So that would certainly be exciting to see. And I think there's a good chance that he'll have a lot of opportunities early in the year, unless we see one of their other point guards establish themselves early. So I can keep it rolling with my next Power 8 hot take. And this one's not so much of a prediction as it is just an opinion. But when it comes to St. Bonaventure this year, we read off the stat on our last final team preview episode of the season, but they only return 0.5% of their minutes, which is just
I think
ridiculous.
that's actually high. I think it might be 0.3.
I might have rounded up to give them a little more credit. I mean, the Bonnies are picked low. I think they were picked 10th this year in the official poll, if I'm not mistaken. I just feel like there's a good chance St. Bonaventure is still going to finish, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth place just because of their coach. But if that does happen, I'm not sure that's still a great result. Like, I just feel like with St. Bonaventure, the program's expectations have been raised over the last 5 years. And I feel like as a fan base, they should still want more than that. I almost feel like this season is a result of mismanaging last year and arguably the year before, just not keeping enough of these guys around. So I guess where I'm going with this is when St. Bonaventure finishes 500, I don't want to see the Mark Schmidt for Coach of the Year opinions out there because he kind of, I don't want to say he ruined this season after what happened last year, but I just feel like the roster is not in great shape, and that's kind of the coaching staff's responsibility.
Yeah, well, we talked about it last year. The reason that I felt like Bob McKillop was the coach of the year, although actually I think I voted for Anthony Grant
Yeah, that
in
was
our ballot.
terrible.
But the reason that I was okay with Bob McKillop winning it was not because Davidson was the one seed. It was because he went out and found Foster Lawyer, who was the perfect missing piece for that team, and that's what led them to being so good. Like, the coach of the year discussion starts at the point of roster construction.
Right.
And so I think when we try to figure this out, like a good coach of the year candidate might be someone like Frank Martin or Keith Dambrot if they can take their teams out of the gutter and elevate them a few notches. It should not be Mark Schmidt unless they finish like top three.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this day and age with the transfer portal, I know recruiting high school kids or college transfers to Allegheny, New York can't be the easiest thing, but St. Bonaventure is a good enough team where that staff had the opportunities to bring in a really good roster. Maybe they did. They're the biggest mystery in the conference, so we don't know. But I just think that they've been good enough the last several years where if they're below fifth or sixth place, maybe that's unfair, but I feel like that's kind of disappointing just where that team's been.
I'm not sure how that was a hot take, but I do agree with it. So we'll
Well,
let
it's
it
just,
slide.
well, it's because they're getting picked 10th, and when they inevitably finish like seventh place, everyone is going to go nuts for how great of a job that is. And I'm not sure it is. They should be perennial contenders or at least easily in the top half every year.
Yeah, well, we don't have to worry about that because my not even hot enough to be mild take is that you do not need to worry about the Bonnies finishing in the top eight.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So.
All right, I'll move into my medium takes. Number one of which is that Dayton will go at least 500 in quad one and quad two games without Malachi Smith this year. Now, let us remember that the two biggest reasons why the Flyers missed the tournament last year were obviously the terrible LaSalle game, but it was also the two of the three games where Malachi Smith played less than 20 minutes. Austin Peay, he gets his third foul on a technical late in the first half. The team crumbles in the second half with him glued to the bench. Richmond, he rolls his ankle in the final moments of the first half. The team crumbles in the second half, blowing huge double-digit leads to two teams that they were definitely better than in both of those games. And the coaching staff for Dayton just isn't doing their job if they didn't spend all summer thinking about what can they do when that happens again this year. They had an open scholarship. They did not go out and get a pure backup point guard. And for all the Dayton fans screaming that, oh, they should have gotten a transfer, look at Lynn Greer leaving. You were not getting anyone as good or better than Lynn Greer to come back up a sophomore all-conference level point guard who's going to play 37 minutes a game. But what they could have done is tried to find some sort of high school diamond in the rough, a 2-3-star kid who's just happy to be at Dayton, who could just be a steady hand, and they chose not to do that. And that tells me that they have confidence that either Kobe Elvis or Mike Shirovjomps, probably some combination of both, can keep this team afloat and good in Malachi's absence. They're going to play five quad one, quad two games in November, barring something insane like playing NC State and Atlantis and that team just turning out to not be good or something crazy like that. But it seems like Malachi is definitely out for the first two, possibly out for all five. And basically, I'd say for the Flyers holding on to an at-large bid without him, they just got to go 3-2 and not blow a stupid game, which they're not going to do this year because those guys are going to be focused for those after last season. But I think they're ready. I think that they take care of business in November without him. They get at least one really nice win in Atlantis. And the biggest reason is we saw the Mike Shirovjomps clips from the exhibition. Some of those passes are just beautiful. And we'll see what he does against Division One competition, but it's becoming undeniable that this hype might be very, very real with him. And if he can just be a part-time point guard and Kobe Elvis cannot commit a bunch of turnovers playing the spot, then their front court's as good as anyone else's that they're going to face in November. It's probably better than most of those teams. And those two can hold it down. The big guys will dominate, and they'll be sitting squarely in the tournament when Malachi comes back.
Yeah, I hope you're right. And I mean, I was at the exhibition game and watching Shirovjomps handle the ball and pass at his size is really impressive. And I think he is going to have a great season. But I do think the exhibition game did kind of let everyone know that as it stands right now, Dayton is not a deep team. Having Malachi Smith injured, Kobe Brea didn't play. And now we found out another potential guard option, Caleb Washington's been suspended for a few games at least. So they're going to have to rely on Elvis and Shirovjomps a lot in their early going. But if they can survive this first tough month of the year, it does seem like they would be in good shape. But so we'll see where it goes without Malachi Smith. Clearly, that was not when Dayton was at its best, when it, at their best, when they couldn't play him last year.
Yeah, and you mentioned them losing some guard options. I'm not sure that really matters. And I'm certainly worried about them offensively without him, especially if Kobe Brea is not back for the SMU and UNLV games. That could actually be a real problem. But as good of a defender as Malachi Smith is, I don't think they're going to miss him defensively. Because if they continue to just play Kobe Elvis, RJ Blakeney, Daron Holmes for 30 minutes plus each, that's three A-level defenders on the court at once. And without Malachi, that means that the other two guys are all going to be 6'5 or above. That's going to be a lengthy defense with Kobe Elvis guarding smaller opposing point guards all game long. They're going to be lengthy and they're going to be able to fly around the floor. So I think they keep their elite defense without him. Even in without Caleb Washington and without Kobe Brea, like None of these guys being out hurts the D.
Well, no, I mean, their defense is fine. I'm just worried that they have two scholarship guards right now available, unless you count RJ Blakeney, which I
I
don't
think kind of
really.
just play Blakeney at the two anyway. I don't think they really care about the difference between a shooting guard and a small forward.
I guess he wasn't really doing that though. We were seeing a lot of walk-on minutes, which concerns me. But
It's
anyway,
an
we'll find
exhibition.
out.
I wouldn't grind my guys into the ground anyway, so.
No. Well, speaking of guards, we'll talk about a team with a whole bunch of them, and that's VCU, one of my favorites. And I don't know if this is a hot take or not. It might not be hot enough, but I think Jaden Nunn will play well enough that going into next year, he is going to be a player of the year strong contender. I could see him averaging more, I'll say more than any non-Bones player that VCU's had over the last 5 years. So we're talking in the 15, 16, 17 points per game range. And I just think he's really going to establish himself as an elite scorer this year because there is such a big void on the Rams roster, losing Vince Williams. So I think it's going to be his team. Like Ace is still going to be the glue on offense and defense, but I don't think he's going to score a ton of points. I think that's all going to go to none. And we'll make that the take that he scores more points than any non-Bones player of the Three Bit League podcast era, so 5 years.
So, I have an article going up on Busting Brackets this week, and just depending on timing, it may have already been up by the time this episode gets released. And hopefully, you've read it already. If not, I really encourage you to check it out, where I go through some more predictions for the season. And the headliner, the one that I was going to kick it off with, was that Jaden Nunn was the next superstar in this conference. I was fully prepared. I had everything kind of sketched out, and I went to go check some stats. And it wasn't what I remembered.
Uh-oh.
Jaden Nunn kind of fell apart at the end of conference play. And now we remember the NIT where in the Wake Forest Princeton games, he was awesome. But he hit the freshman wall really hard at the end of the year. And maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the freshman wall. I'm still going to pick him all conference. But the scoring numbers were just a little bit lesser than I think we've kind of remembered because of how great he was in the final few games.
Well, they weren't great scoring numbers overall, but I'd say the same about Bones Highland. He averaged less than 10 points a game as a freshman and completely blew up. And I just feel like we've seen that from enough VCU top prospects that have blossomed in years 2 and 3.
My counter would be, I think Nunn's blossoming this year is closer to that of Ace Baldwin than Bones Highland, where he just becomes a better two-way contributor. He's a better passer, he's a better defender versus Bones, who is a scoring machine in the NBA now. He's a natural scoring demon. And by the way, with him, it was kind of obvious from the moment he stepped on the court. We talked about it on here. His freshman year, they just didn't use him right. In his
Yeah.
sophomore year, they finally just took the leash off and just let him just go completely nuts. And that's where he blew up. So, yeah, I'll give you some heat on the Jaden Nunn take.
All right, well, we'll see where it goes, but I don't know if that bodes well for VCU if he does just if Nunn becomes like a better secondary piece and gets better at, all the little things. I think they are going to need another superstar with Ace Baldwin to reach their ceiling, but we'll see. If it's not none, maybe it could be someone else too, because they do have a fair amount of options over there.
All right, so my next one is also VCU based, but on the other side of the court. The Rams will lead the country in steal percentage this year.
Ooh, havoc.
They were eighth last year. They lose Keyshawn Curry and Vince Williams, although Vince Williams, not his defensive contributions didn't particularly come through the havoc pieces of the defense. He was a better half court defender. But with Ace Baldwin, who has a chance to challenge for the national steals title now that Jacob Gilliard's gone, he should run away with the A-10 steals title, paired with Nunn, paired with Nick Kern, who's kind of like a young Keyshawn Curry almost, where I'm not sure he gives them much on offense, but he's going to just be a demon on that press. He's got some freaky length and athleticism to help them out. Mike Rhodes has raved about the fact that that's where Zeb Jackson's going to make his biggest contributions early on in the year, is in that Havoc defense, getting steals. And I think this team eventually just kind of goes four out in their biggest games, where Brandon Johns will play a bit at the four and some at the five, but they're just going to be flying around three guards with David Shriver at the four, four guards at times. And the calling card for that team is just going to be the Havoc again, pressuring other teams' guards. And with Baldwin, Nunn, and Kern, you could pressure other teams' guards in the half court.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I went on the VCU Rams Rewind podcast with George Templeton last week, and he actually had those same thoughts that VCU could do a lot more havoc this year. Kind of the old school Shaka Smart teams that we used to see, just based on the makeup of this year's roster. And certainly, I think VCU is always a good pick to be up there near the top of the leaderboard in steals. So might be something they rely a little bit more on. Just now that they probably won't have quite as much 3-point shooting, they might have to create a little bit more in transition. So I like that.
By the way, they were last first in 2014 under Shaka Smart, which was actually the third straight year that they did it. So
Yeah.
there is precedent there.
And Mike Rhodes on the staff those years too. So could happen. All right. I think I might have two more Power 8 hot takes. This one kind of, I guess, maybe you could look at this as a positive one. And again, not sure how odd it is, but I feel like there's a lot of coaches that take criticism in this conference, and I feel like none of them are really on the hot seat, especially after a year where we have six new coaches, seven if you include Drew Valentine. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of changes. But when it comes to guys like Keith Van Brandt, Billy Lang, even I'll throw in Anthony Grant and Travis Ford, I don't think any of these guys are in any danger, barring like a dead last finish, even for Dayton and St. Louis. I know expectations are sky high, but when it comes to Dayton and SLU, these are still teams making consistent postseason appearances. Anthony Grant was the coach of the year nationally 3 years ago. I feel like with the expectations, what they are, some people have gotten it in their heads that if they don't make the tournament, they're in serious jeopardy. I'm just here with this take to say that I don't think that's true at all. And I don't think it should be true. I feel like they've done enough over the last, their 10 years in the A10. And then same when it comes to Dan Brott. I know people have been very critical of him, but I think his resume at the mid-major rank speaks for itself. And we've said it enough that last year was a big outlier. So I think he gets the Dukes back on track. And then I can't believe I'm doing this, but to give St. Joe's and Billy Lang a little bit of credit, last year they did make a lot of big analytical improvements. They jumped a ton in the Bart Torvik rankings and KenPom, hit a wall at the end of last year, but they lost a lot of close games. I feel like we could see a little bit more continued improvement from them. They've also just dealt with as many injuries as anybody the last 3 years, so I feel like he's continuing to bring in enough decent talent that they should give him at least, I mean, unless this year is an unmitigated disaster, they should give him a little bit more of a chance.
So I almost had something similar to this, and I decided to slide it down to the over-unders. And so I
Okay.
guess I'll just ask you here now, over-under 13 and a half of these same 15 coaches back next year.
I kind of feel like it is over just because, I mean, with so many new coaches, I feel like there's about seven that there's no chance there's any movement. I mean, unless, like, if Mark Schmidt takes the UMass job or goes within the conference, does that count as a new coach?
Yeah, but UMass isn't gonna, that
I
UMass
not
job isn't gonna
UMass,
be
but
open,
someone else,
so.
maybe he goes to Ford. I don't know. No, I really don't think we're going to see as much movement. I think if anything, it could be Fran Dunphy retiring after 1 year if he just decides I've had enough of this. But I don't really feel like anyone, except for maybe Billy Lang, even though I kind of laid out why I disagree, I don't think anyone else is in huge trouble.
My take was going to be that all 15 are back next year.
Yeah, they very well could.
I don't think Loyola's good enough this year for it to be the big season that gets Drew Valentine the Big Ten job that he inevitably kind of feels like he's climbing towards. Same goes for George Mason. I don't think that this is the moment where Kim English ends up with some like giant top of the line Power Five job unless they flat out just win the conference.
Well, and it's hard to leave after 2 years
Yeah,
if you're a
and by
head
the way,
coach.
second year as a head coach for both of those guys. And they're both still super young. And so I think they're just a few years away in terms of resume building from making that jump. Duquesne is not firing Dan Brott unless they finish in the basement again, because we've seen how bad Duquesne can get. And right now, he's the best option they're gonna have. Anthony Grant's not getting fired. Neither is Travis Ford, unless they like go under 500. And I think the one true question mark is Billy Lang. But if you're the St. Joe's administration, if you were already fed up with him, you should have just fired him last year. Because with the recruits that he has coming in, save a 2-16, 1-17 season this year, it would be stupid to get rid of him now.
I think so. And just looking at his tenure too, like the first year they finished, I think 13th, they brought back like two scholarship players. That's not his fault. The next year, Ryan Daly misses half the year. As soon as he comes back, they win four in a row. And then even last year, for I would say 60% of the season, they were pretty respectable and lost a slew of close games down the stretch where it's surely been frustrating to be a Hawks fan, but I just digging a little bit deeper, I don't think they've been quite as terrible as we've all believed. I mean, it's still not great, and it's not where the A-10 needs St. Joe's to be, but I'm also just not sure how much of that's Billy Lang's fault.
Yeah, I that one will be interesting though. But we'll move it along to my first of my scorching takes. And that is that the Dayton Flyers will lead the nation in 2-point field goal percentage. They did this in 2020. They were actually second in Anthony Grant's first 2 years. Believe it or not, second in the country to Belmont in 2018 with that bad team. It was the only thing that they were good at. They were 37th last year. And this season, I think it just skyrockets up. It was part of what made that 2020 team special. And I think it's part of what's going to make this team so great. Daron Holmes and Tamani Kamara around the rim as just absolute menaces. Malachi Smith just getting downhill, finishing through traffic. And very importantly, this is a team that just doesn't take a lot of mid ranges. You have both of the Kobes who love the occasional floater, and Kamara's got that little foul line jumper that he likes to pull out. But other than that, this is a team that's going to shoot threes and attack the rim. And this is where the Shirov Jumps wild card really comes in, where if he's going to try to throw those bold passes throughout the year, that really helps this case because turnovers off of those does not hurt your shooting percentage. But successfully threading the needle and getting a bunch of wide open layups for Kamara, for Holmes, for Tyrone Baker, who's supposedly also a menace around the rim, that's going to do wonders for them. I think that's where the Dayton offense ends up being pretty good this year.
That's pretty much where they've always been good with Anthony Grant. And I think individually, you could say Daron Holmes has a chance to lead the nation in 2-point shooting across the country. I mean, he shot 66% as a freshman last year, very similar to Obi Toppin, who ended up around 70% for his National Player of the Year season. So, yeah, I don't think that would be surprising at all for Dayton to be right up there near the top.
By the way, stat of the day, Gonzaga's been either one or two each of the last 4 seasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, Gonzaga's, I don't follow the West Coast Conference. They're probably going to be pretty good until the Elite Eight, so.
Well, and that's the way that this ends up being wrong is because Drew Timmy's back.
That could be a problem, but that's all right. Okay, I only have one more hot take. It's maybe not the best one to end on. How many more do you have?
I got two, and they both got some fire to them.
Okay, well, here I'll go first because I have a feeling your next two will kind of contradict me, and maybe we can banter about it. But I feel like all the years we've done this podcast, going on year five now, and comparing it to each of these other seasons, and especially to we get Loyola Chicago in the conference, another good program. Just going back and thinking about all these other years, I think the middle of the pack this year in the A-10 is just so extraordinarily average. Why do we all think the A-10 is so great this year? It's fine, but I've heard respected people say this is a four-bid league, maybe more than that. What are we talking about? It's still, until it actually happens, it's a two or three-bid league in my eyes. And look, we'll get to the preseason prediction segment with our power rankings later. I think there's three really solid rosters, and then everyone else has a whole bunch of question marks. And I just don't see how this year's conference, we keep hearing about how it's such a strong A-10. Other than Loyola joining, I don't see how it's that much different than the last couple of years.
So I'll counter with the fact that if you're in the middle, that just automatically means you have questions. Like if Richmond didn't have a bunch of questions, they'd be a top two contender this year
Well, not everyone
anyway.
can be a top.
And
I mean,
well, one of the biggest things is I think the top three are just simply better than the top three the last few years. But someone always sneaks up. And so that's where I do get to one of my last two takes, which is that one of the teams outside of the preseason top four, Dayton, St. Louis, VCU, Loyola, is going to make the NCAA tournament. And that's either Davidson or George Mason. Davidson, who just has like seemingly unlimited options of guys to plug and play next to Lawyer and Menenga. There's a lot of guys who could really break out this year. And I just love that team's ceiling. And then George Mason, who, if they can just figure out the point guard spot, is going to be a top three offense in this conference. The defense should be improved this year, and if they can get that to around league average, then they're right in the conversation as well.
well, I do like that take, and I don't want to give the middle of the pack no credit because I think there's a lot of potential across the league, and maybe that's where I'm not giving it enough credit. And we saw it with Davidson last year coming from, I think, preseason number six. No one thought they'd make the tournament. But I feel like your comment on the top of the conference being the best we've seen recently, I feel like we say that every year. Last year, St. Bonaventure was ranked. The COVID year, Richmond and St. Louis were
We
everyone's
sure as
mid-major
hell did not say
darlings.
that last year because
What
we were
about
both
Rash?
really skeptical of Richmond.
I liked Richmond quite a bit. I feel like they were getting top 25
I
votes
picked
in the
that shaky
preseason.
Dayton team second last year. I think I'd have them five or six this season.
What about when VCU was ranked and Davidson was getting votes? Like the Every year, people want to say the A-10's good, and it just hasn't. It's been fine the last few years. It's not a. It's still like in that weird zone between mid-major and power conference, but
I think
it's.
every year we feel like there's one really good team. Like I loved Bonaventure last year. You can go back and dig up the tapes. I love that team. I was way too high in on them. I didn't like anyone below them that much.
Well.
2 years ago, I picked St. Bonaventure to win the league in the COVID season. That doesn't seem that crazy because they actually did. That was nuts. But it was because there wasn't that many great teams coming back. And I think we forget year one of this pod 4 seasons ago,
Oh, that was a bad
this league
year.
sucked. It flat out sucked. Like it
And
was the
we knew
12th or
it.
13th best conference going into the year. I picked St. Joe's to win it. They finished like seventh.
And
And
we knew it
like,
about 2 weeks into the
yeah,
year,
like
too.
because Charlie Brown just wasn't that good and the rest of their roster wasn't good to begin with.
Well, I would say that first year we did the podcast, the 2018-19 season, that's the exception. We're going in, there was very little optimism for the A-10, and I think George Mason was picked like second. So that tells you all you need to know about what people thought about the conference. But I hope I'm wrong. I just feel like there's so much optimism, and I can't say the A-10 is going to be a four-bid league when it hasn't even been three in about 5 years.
We'll see. This could be the magical last season Mountain West trip because that was a conference that was struggling for a while too. And
It
they ended
could.
up with
That's right.
four. But we'll go back to the middle here for my final scalding hot take. Duquesne comes in at dead last in the preseason poll this year. That's completely insane. Not only are they going to come roaring out of the basement this year, they are going to avoid the pillow fight entirely.
Ooh.
That's right. Top nine for the Dukes this year on the strength of the three transfers that they're bringing in. I know Tevin Brewer is going to miss the beginning of the season, but it definitely seems like he'll be back for A-10 play. Him and Day-Day Grant are just going to stabilize what was one of the worst backcourts I have seen in the 5 years doing this pod. They didn't know how to pass. Like, they literally could not get assists on that team. And the one thing that they did do right was rebound and defend the rim. And the two guys who did that were Trey Williams and Austin Rotrov. And they're the two guys who are back. They add Joe Reese to that combo. They're going to be really good on the interior this season. The forward group is very shaky, and that's where this could end up going downhill. But Kevin Easley, the king of inconsistency, rookie of the year in his conference at Chattanooga, basically got glued to the bench at TCU. He was just kind of a mid-tier scorer last year for this team. I think just having better players around him is going to make him better, and he can hold up as a quality starter this year. So I'm taking the Dukes. Every year we see one projected pillow fight team jump out. I actually think this year the divide between the top nine and the bottom six is really sharp. And so we're only going to see one of those projected bottom six jump up. I'm taking the Dukes from the basement to be that team.
I like it. I love that we end with a Duquesne take. And I have a stat for you because I was going through Duquesne's just to see the disaster that unfolded last year. Realized they played Bowling Green. And did you know that
And
Joe
Reese went
Reese,
nuts.
he took it to the Dukes. He put up a 15 and 12 double double. So if that's a sign of things to come, they should be all right. I like it.
Yeah, that's actually in their media guide for this year. They were not hiding it.
I mean, that might have been the best game by a current Duquesne player last year. So, all right.
Yeah,
Well,
it actually probably was.
right. Should we get into our over-unders next before wrapping up with the official preseason power rankings?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll kick this off here. Over 2.5 times that I screw up the first name of a player that starts with J this year, because there's two different ones here that could cause problems. First of all, for the first 3 months of last year, I thought that Jalen Deloach's first name was Jaden. And multiple times over the summer, I called Javon Pickett Jalen, because Jalen Pickett, the all-conference guard on Penn State, who was just more omnipresent in our minds last year than a guy who was starting for a really bad Missouri team.
I would say over because I feel like we mess up a lot of names over here. I don't see any. I mean, if Jalen Quinn and Jaden Dawson, a couple of Loyola freshmen, if they break out, that we could be in big trouble because I already don't know enough about the Ramblers.
If Javon Pickett is good enough that we talk about him like every other episode, this is going over. Because I'm just going to keep screwing that one up. I think I finally got the Deloach thing down.
I mean, I love VCU and I still mess that one up from time to time. Yeah, we'll see. I'm scanning through the rosters. I don't see too many that I'm gonna a mess up, but we'll find out. That's a good way to kick it off. Why don't we just I'll start with a staple every year. Over under 1.5 technical fouls for Anthony Grant. He had one last year at Richmond, and I think the second to last regular season game of the year. Could have gotten a second against Jordair Jett of St. Louis, but I don't believe he is called.
I'll take the over. I think he knows that this is a really good team this year, and he's going to come out with the fire that that requires. And at some point, I think he gets one in one of these early games when Malachi Smith is out. Maybe a little frustration over the backcourt, a little frustration that he doesn't have his point guard. And at some point in Atlantis, he's picking one up. while wearing like a Hawaiian shirt that goes completely against the vibe.
I'll say over too. I think in an unlikely upset, he's going to get one by using a timeout that he doesn't have. Like one game, Dayton's just randomly going to burn a bunch of timeouts.
Impossible.
You would think so, but that maybe that's a Power 8 hot take. Somehow Dayton's going to use all their timeouts in a game this year.
That
No, I'll
only
say over, of
happens.
course.
It only happens if he gets bowled over by a player with about 5 minutes to go and has to go back to the trainer's room for part of the second half, and John Brandon just starts burning timeouts till he gets back out there.
We'll see. It could happen.
All right, next one. St. Louis all conference players over under 2.5. I think this is an easy over for basically everyone who follows this conference except for you.
And it probably is because I'm thinking about it right now. So, I mean, clearly, I think with St. Louis, they've got five guys with the potential. Like you could say, I mean, Yuri, Perkins, Jimerson, and then Okoro was picked on the third team, which I kind of
Yeah,
disagree
it
with.
was.
And then Javon Pickett also maybe as a transfer could make it. I'm gonna say over. Even I'm not sure I love it, but St. Louis is going to score so many points this year. And at the end of the day, like scoring points gets you on the all conference team. So if Gibson Jimerson and Javonte Perkins both average 16 a game, they're both on. And I can't imagine what would have to happen for Yuri Collins not to make it because
They'd
he's.
have to finish like 12th and everyone else gets hurt.
So here's my response. The answer is over. Will they deserve to get three? That's another discussion, but they're gonna get three.
I go over and yes to your question. Collins, Perkins, Okoro.
Okay. See, I could see that too because I could see like with Perkins and Jimerson. I mean, there's two schools of thought that having two dangerous shooters like that on each side of the court is gonna be insane to guard against, but. Maybe it's one too many cooks in the kitchen and they don't have that great chemistry. I don't know. We'll find out.
That
But
and Gibson Jimerson has tailed off hard each of the last two seasons in conference play
yeah.
after being amazing in the non-con. And also, I've just come to the conclusion that Francis Okoro is basically just like 98% Hassan French 2.0. And Hassan French just kept finding his way on the third team.
I
So.
mean, he's not like the like Hassan French was versatile. Like he had more ball handling and passing than Okoro, but Okoro also makes free throws, which is kind of shocking. I could see that. And I could see like Jimerson still having a good efficient season, but maybe he just takes a little bit of a backseat and scores 12 a game while still shooting 46% from three. I could see that too. So it's gonna be over though, I think, to answer your question. I have a similar one that I think we talked about in our team preview. And there were a couple teams we could have done this for, but I thought this would be the most interesting. Over under 1.5 all conference players for UMass.
So Noah Fernandes, no doubt. I just picked him to finish second in the conference in assists, so we can just go ahead and mark that.
Yeah.
He's also going to lead in triple nickels again too. So
The door is open without Grant Golden and Jordan Hall, two triple nickel kings.
it's a really tough one because, like I've talked about, I love the middle this year, and I think we just kind of start running out of spots. And if UMass comes in eighth, I'm not sure anyone else finds their way on, but I am going to take the over. The Matt Cross hype is really building to a crazy level. And he certainly, as we talked about in the preview, he certainly has the talent to easily be that second guy. But I just think there's too many good candidates on this team. It could be Rashul Diggins. It could be Wildens Levesque as just a defensive ace who's decent at the three-point line. Gets himself up to like 12, 13 points a game. I just think all the scenarios where UMass ends up with one or where they are just like under 500 and all the transfers are mediocre, I think there's just a better chance that someone breaks out.
See, I agree with you. I think someone's going to break out. I'm still going to say under, though, because I think he's great. And I hate saying this. I don't think it's a guarantee that Noah Fernandes makes the all conference team, though, when, if I'm not mistaken, he didn't make it last year. And a lot of that had to do with injuries in the middle of the season. And even at the end, when he was playing at his best, he was playing hurt. But at the end of the day, I'm just not sure UMass is going to be a good enough team to support two all conference players. And with there being so many options, and early in the year, we could see a lot of guys getting a chance, it might just be hard for a Rashul Diggins or a Matt Cross or whoever to stand out in the early going. So I think they definitely get one, but I'm going to say under.
All right, over under 2.5 A-10 players in the top 50 nationally in block percentage. Last year, this conference was the kings of the block shot. They had five in the top 45, but only Daron Holmes is back out of that group.
So you said top 50 block rate?
Top 50 nationally. Can they get three this year after having five last season?
Oh man, yeah, the A-10 has had a ton of shot blockers over the years. I think Daron Holmes, like, we can mark him off as
Easy.
almost, I don't want to say a guarantee, but he's got a really good chance.
He was 40th last year and he just wasn't blocking that many at the beginning of the season either, so.
Right. I'm trying to like scan through some guys. Oh my God, Ejike Obina never blocks shots. He was like the first name that popped into my head. He was at 1.4%. I feel like it's got to be under. I don't know. I mean, Okoro, I think, is a good chance, right? He had to be close last year.
He was 11th. He was actually fairly off. I think he got a lot better as the season went on. I'm going to take the under. I basically think it's Okoro, Trey Williams, Ricky Lindo kind of battling to grab one of those spots this year. But I just don't see it happening with two of them. I guess the wild card would be one of the VCU guys, but I just don't think Deloach gets there. And as much as everyone's starting to whisper about the LaWall vertical, Mike Rhodes said no one's talking about him. Dr. John's talking about him. But apparently the vertical is even higher than he initially said. He's just not going to play enough minutes to qualify.
Yeah, probably not. So, gosh, I wanted this to be an over, but I'm just like clicking through. Like, I looked at the Drame twins. They don't block a lot of shots at Masao now.
Josh Oduro weirdly like not that far off last year.
No, Oduro surprisingly does block a lot, but
And
he's too important offensively to risk getting fouls.
well, the only thing would be maybe he just gets a little bit more aggressive this year since he actually will have a backup.
Yeah.
So he can afford to be off the court for 10 minutes as opposed to just three.
Man, that was a good question. I wish I prepared more for that, but I like it. All right, I'll get into my next. We already kind of talked about this actually, so it can be a quick one with one of your hot takes. Over under top 20 defensive efficiency for VCU. So we'll say 19 and a half or better
Over.
on the KenPom, as in better than that.
Yeah, that's what has to happen for them to be a true contender in this conference, which we both think they are.
Yeah, I think easily. And I think even
This defense is going to be dynamite this
it
year.
is every year. And we already talked about it. Like, they lose Hassan Ward, Vince Williams, Keyshawn Curry, but they just reload every year. They're going to be just fine on defense.
Hassan
So,
Ward not really playing that much at the end of the year last year anyway.
no, he didn't. And Deloach fouls too much. That's the problem. If he can get more discipline, though, VCU is going to be,
I
as
think
always, great on
they're
defense.
as good at the center spot as they were last year, even without Ward. Like once those freshmen figure it out, I think they'll be great in the interior. Brandon Johns is just going to be great for them in terms of just bullying people down low. Like I said, I think Kern basically kind of gives them what Curry did defensively. And so if they can just kind of cobble together a Vince Williams replacement, they're still there. And they were seventh last year with Williams, so.
Yeah. All right. What's your next over
All right,
under?
I actually was going to a different defensive efficiency team. This is for the A-10, George Mason over under eighth. Under being they finish in the top half over bottom half. Or you can just push.
Could be a push. They were ninth last year, or are they worse than that? They might have been like
They're worse
11.
than that. They were 11th.
See, that's the key. Like for George Mason, if they have a point guard and if they actually play the defense that Kim English wants, that's where they can win the conference. But if they don't have the depth that they're hoping for, and if some of these new guys don't really improve the defense, then they're going to be right back where they were in eighth or ninth place. Man, that is a great team to do this for. I'm gonna say I almost want to go with the push because I think that's a really good line right in the middle of the pack. I'll say slightly worse, but I think they're gonna be really good on offense to make up for it and still be a good team. I'll say they'll be ninth.
I'm going to take the push. There's four that they have no chance of beating: Dayton, VCU, Loyola, Fordham. I
Yeah.
think Duquesne gets a lot better on that end this year. I think St. Louis is somewhere right around that mark as well. And then just one of these bottom teams will be better than we expect. I guess the other big one is UMass in the
Yeah,
top
don't
half.
forget Frank Martin.
Yeah, if Frank Martin just turns that around immediately. Because it's kind of hard to forget because they haven't been anywhere near the top half for years.
Yeah, and
But
I'd say too, like we haven't hit said his name yet, but Archie Miller has been a really good defensive coach too, and Rhode Island was already a good defensive team to begin with.
yeah, I think they're kind of closer to like that SLU George Mason just middle of the pack group this year.
Right, but that's
If
another
they
team that could.
had them, if they kept like one just like a Mitchell twin, they'd be easily top five with
That would
Archie
be
Miller.
perfect because no team needs both Mitchell twins. Like they
No.
do the same things. What was Arkansas doing? Yeah, no, that's a good question for Mason. I think the push is a fair answer. I mean, they're gonna be a little bit better than last year, I think, but I'm just not sure it's gonna be a huge
Well,
jump.
just having Ojiako is going to help a lot,
I
so.
think Singleton too. I mean, I talked about him a lot on our team preview, but he's a huge guard that had some nice defensive stats in the Mountain West. So now that I'm still gonna say worse than eighth, but very close. Eighth or ninth is where I'll go. All right, how about this one? Just kind of on the overall strength of the A-10. And this is tough to have a good frame of reference, but I said over under 11 and a half epitomes of brutality for the conference. I think last year there were 13, although maybe I'm not sure. So Dayton had three, VCU had two, then we had GW, Fordham, St. Joe's, LaSalle. Duquesne also had three. The question was St. Louis, who lost to Belmont at home, but I don't see a return game. So I'm pretty sure that was a
I
brutality.
think it
I
was
think St. Louis
as
paid the
unfair
Bruins to
as
be
that
there.
was because,
They paid them to show
yeah.
up. That's a. It is
Well,
what it
and it could
is.
happen this year too because Murray State, shout out to our guys over at the West Pine Bills for confirming it. Murray State is a bye game, so that would count, even though although I guess we don't know how good Murray State is this year. They
I
lost
don't
like their
think that they
entire
lost their.
team.
Well, how many times has Murray State lost a coach and continued to be good, though? But I don't think it's going to be quite as bad, but I said over under 11 and a half compared to 13 last year.
I'm going to take a slight under, and the only reason why is because I just struggle to see a second one on opening day. It's just like that's the big issue is we end up with like three right off the bat every year. But everyone's just kind of playing some really bad teams to start off the year, with the exception of LaSalle and George Mason, who are both on the road against top 25 teams. So they both lose. If they both lose, that doesn't affect this at all. Like, the sneaky one was Manhattan.
Oh
If
man,
they could beat VCU, that is not happening at this point. But other than Murray State being a candidate, like it's
I mean, Rhodey plays
Quinnipiac,
Quinnipiac. Yeah,
that's I guess that's the one that I'd mark as the most
that
likely,
wouldn't
but
be the
I just
first
don't think we
time.
get to two.
That wouldn't be the first time Archie opened his tenure at a new school with an epitome of brutality. I think he lost to Indiana State in his first game at Indiana. How about Davidson starting off with non-Division One Guilford? We're gonna get a Nick Hillup special right off the bat. It lives
Yep.
on. I love that.
And then on the road at Wright State.
Can't believe that. I'm gonna say under 11 and a half though, just because I don't think Dayton and VCU are gonna combine for five again. And so assuming those two teams and St. Louis too, like those three schools combined for six of them last year. That's not gonna happen again.
And it should have been seven because VCU should have lost to St. Peter's,
I know
which
that.
all of a sudden doesn't sound bad. That was a
Yeah,
bad
isn't
game.
that
It was
crazy
a
to think
really bad
about?
game. I'll throw in the one other, the sneaky one to watch on night one is if Bonaventure's just not good. St. Francis PA has just been really solid for a half a decade now.
Never
Another
know.
middle of nowhere, snowy mountain town, not too far from Bonaventure in Loretto, PA. They could come up and beat the Bonnies.
They could. Wouldn't be the first time we've seen the Bonnies lose a bad game on opening night.
Yep. All right. I will go to another guy on a team that could be bad. Edge Obina, over under 8.5 rebounds this season. He last year was at 7.9, which was good for fourth in the conference. 8.5 probably wins him the league title this year because Chuba Oham's got to 11.5 last year, just running away with it. But he obviously is gone from Fordham. So 8.5 would have finished second behind him last season.
You know, I like Obina a lot. I think I'm gonna say under just because we talked about it a lot earlier, but St. Joe's just has so many centers on the team that I think they might not play him quite as many minutes. And I think maybe we'll see more Charles Coleman. Anton Jansen hasn't really played that much as a Hawk, but maybe he'll get in more. They get big breakout guy, Kasper Klazak. Maybe he eats into those rebounding. So I still think Obina could lead the league, but 8.5's a little bit high.
By the way, it's Casper Classic, like a classic, like a classic movie almost.
I know, I was
Because
over.
Billy Lang said it on the Field of 68 thing,
I know, that's
and
how I learned
I
it.
was not ready for that pronunciation. I'm taking the over, partially because I think St. Joe's just going to chuck up so many bricks that he's just going to be a menace on the offensive boards this year.
Well, so that leads me in perfectly to my next question, which was St. Joe's over under 31.4% from three, which is basically the midpoint of the Billy Lang era. They were up to 33.6% last year, but they lose Taylor Funk and Jordan Hall, two of their best shooters. I mean, it's not a question that they're going to take a bunch of them. It's just, can they actually be efficient from deep? So I think 31 and a
Unknown.
half, that's
It's
under
it
that.
the only I think the only saving grace is if either Classic or Christian Winborn just turns out to be a really good 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
It feels like there's going to be a lot of centers shooting threes when they shouldn't be. And like I said, I think Eric Reynolds is just going to take like two to three horrible pull-up shots every game because he's going to be chucking this year.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be an under just because of the volume. Although I will say, when I saw Christian Winborn scored 21 in St. Joe's preseason scrimmage, I think they beat someone good, like Towson, I think.
Thousand.
That got my attention. I'm interested to see what he does, but I'm still going under.
All right, my last one. Over under 19.9 points per game for this conference's leading scorer this year. Does someone get to 20? No one did last year. The best was actually Oduro at 17.7. But six of the top seven scorers from last year are back. Oduro, Bishop, Jimerson, Lawyer, Quisenberry, Burton.
I think I'm going to say over, and I actually thought about this as one of my hot takes, but didn't go with it. I kind of think Tyler Burton's going to be this year's good stats, bad team guy, where I don't really like Richmond that much. They just lose way too much, but somebody's going to have to score. And look, Tyler Burton's going to want to make an NBA roster. And if Richmond's not in contention for a double bye, he could go out and just put up some crazy stats. So I also just think he's talented enough to do it. I mean, we've seen him have some electric games, and The question's always been, can he keep that up through conference play? In the last 2 years, he's dropped off a little bit. But I think if he can do it, he could get 20.
I say over either Burton or Bishop. That's it. I have no details. You want details? Might have snuck it into a busting brackets piece this week.
Ooh, a hint. All right. Well, we can wrap it up quick. This is just a given, I think. Or we can
Over.
save it till the end. The bids question. Do we save that till the very end, or do you
Yeah,
want to
let's
go
do it
into
at
that
the end
now?
because I do actually
All
want to
right.
talk about my standings in
All right,
conjunction with
let's.
that.
All right, we can kick off preseason standings to wrap everything up.
All right. We have the same top three. We know that. We're the ones who started the fact that this is a top three and not a top two. I'm riding that. I still found no proof that anyone else lumped VCU in with the other two. My order, Dayton won. This is going to be a great defensive team. Like I said, they're going to dominate in the paint offensively. I think they're a clear top 25 team, so long as they do survive the Malachi Smith injury and just basically not make fools of themselves in November without him. They bring back their top seven, now being pushed by two four-star recruits, one new one in Sharav Jumps, one who basically didn't play last year in Caleb Washington. Ty Baker comes over from an SEC school. Zimi Nwokedie might be reborn. Like all of the ideas of this team is not going to improve out of just staticness are just not going to be there with them. Because if any of these guys take a step back, they're just not going to be playing by the end of the season. This team's too deep for that. Daron Holmes will be the player of the year in this conference. And I'm all in on the Flyers. I've been all in since like mid-February for them this year. I'll take VCU 2 solely off of defense, St. Louis 3. And I guess I'll put in a little bit of a hot take here that at the end of December, this is going to look really stupid because I think we come out of conference play and St. Louis has the best resume in this conference. I think they're going to be awesome in the non-con. And the only reason I have them 3 is because I just can't get over the fact that I don't like them in the specific head-to-head games against Dayton and VCU. Their defense is just not on the same level as the other two. I think the Billikens are a clear-cut tournament team. I think they're going to be awesome in November and December, but I think they're closer to say like 12-6 in conference play than 16-2.
I think that's fair. And so I do have the same top three in a different order. And I do feel good about all of these teams, even though there's a chance it looks silly and maybe one of them just stinks this year. You never know in the A10. That's kind of been the case the last however many years we've been doing this, is that someone surprisingly ends up way out of tournament contention. But at this point, I'd be a coward if I didn't pick VCU first after all the hype this offseason. So I'm going to continue with that. And losing Vince Williams is a killer, but something interesting that I found looking into VCU, and I kind of had forgotten about, but he wasn't that great at the beginning of the year. Only scored 11.6 points per game across the first eight contests. And I really think Ace Baldwin coming back from injury made him better. I think Ace Baldwin makes all his teammates better. And with him having, hopefully, knock on wood, a fully healthy season, he's gonna turn VCU into a quality offense. And we've said enough about their defense. I've got Dayton second. I think the ceiling is sky high. And, expectations are as high as they've ever been in Dayton for sure, but I'm worried about the depth right now. Already having Malachi Smith being injured is a huge red flag for me. And hopefully this isn't an issue and he's back by conference play 100% ready to go. But just feel a little bit better about VCU's defense and just what they did last year. St. Louis third, which I've said it a lot, I think they are the best offensive team. But I'm not feeling quite as good about St. Louis on the defensive end. Just having Perkins, Jimerson, on the court a lot together, I think they're sacrificing a little bit of defense for offense this year. And even like we talked about, or we didn't, but you heard Travis Ford at Media Day, like they're going to score. But defense, especially with some of the newer guys, might not come as quickly. So overall, just not sure if they're quite as well-rounded, but it's close. I mean, you could put any of these teams in whatever order makes you happy, and I wouldn't have a big issue with it.
And my final sleuth thought, I think I can sum up in three words why I don't have them in the top two. They're deep, but not malleable. I guess that was four words. They have a lot of options, but they don't have the options that change this team. Whereas, like, VCU can go to David Shriver, they can really stretch the floor with him on the court. Dayton can go to Shirov Jumps to give them an extra playmaker out there. They can go to Nokeji or Washington if they just need more athletic length. They can go to Baker and keep the two big thing going. I just kind of feel like all of St. Louis's guys are pretty similar in terms of their skill sets. Maybe Sincere Parker bursts into the rotation, gives them extra floor spacing, but this is a great offensive team, but they don't have the defensive ace on the bench. Whereas I think Dayton can go to Kobe Brea to spark the offense to go with that great defense. VCU is going to have some offensive spark plugs to help their defense. And that's the minute difference here.
Well, and I think another thing that needs to be said too, and it's debatable how important this is, but all three of these teams have a lot of returning guys that have spent time in the Atlantic 10. And I'll just talk about the period of time that we've been doing this for 4 years now. VCU has a conference title and two other top three finishes. Dayton has an undefeated season and two other top three finishes. St. Louis has never finished above fourth in that time. And have they ever, outside of coming out of the COVID pause when they were ranked? It's never been late February where they've been a regular season title contender. St. Louis has been good over the years, and I think Travis Ford's a really good coach, but they just haven't really had the same heights that VCU and Dayton have had the last couple of years. So when it gets that close and the teams are all that talented, that's one of the small things I looked at in making that call.
Yeah, I mean they just haven't been great at any point the last few years.
Yeah, they've just
But
always been really good, and that's it.
this is the roster.
It
If
should
they're
be.
go if they're going to be great at some point in the Travis Ford era, it's this team this year.
Yeah, it has to be because, I mean, they're not going to have Perkins and probably not Yuri Collins next year.
All right, so I'll go into my middle. My next tier, I have it 4 to 8. And I'm taking Davidson at 4. I had them there like back in March before they lost Jones and Lee. And I've come all the way full circle. I just love all the options they have. Granted, it was under a different McKillop, but they've never failed to reach the A-10 semifinals in their time in the league. They've made the semis every single year. I'll take Mason at 5. I love the offensive ceiling. I still just got too many question marks defensively to put them any higher. Richmond 6, and it's literally just a bet on the Princeton offense that they have all the right passers and that Tyler Burton plays his way into the NBA this year. Loyola 7, like, why are they fourth? I don't get this. I feel like I was one of the people kind of championing for this team being good this year, but then I just go back and look. Their defense has been so incredible the last few years. And it's going to be really hard to replace Ugwuok and Williamson this year, who were the two best parts of that defense. I think Bryce Golden steps in for one of them, but Lucas Williamson was so special. He was the best of a great defense. And now it just kind of feels like they have a lot of really good pieces. Like, I don't think the defense is right where it was the last few years. And then I'll take UMass 8. Like, I just kind of gave up on them prediction wise. I don't know what to do with them. I just stuck them in the middle.
Yeah, I don't have too many issues, and sadly, my list is kind of similar, but I'll go through 4 through 9 for my next tier. I also have Davidson fourth, and I think something to keep in mind with the Wildcats, they're very picky when it comes to transfers, and maybe that's going to change with Matt McKillop coming in. But in the A10 era, I could only count three guys they've gotten on the transfer market: Will McGarity, Brian Sullivan, and then Foster Lawyer, all quality starters. In the case of Lawyer, a player of the year candidate. So I think bringing in David Skogman and Connor Kokera, even though they're not coming from big name schools, they could have a huge impact. George
Remember,
Mason.
Bob picked them up.
Yeah, that's true
He
too.
was still the coach when they signed at Davidson. So,
Yeah. Maybe they were surprised. Maybe they had no idea. He's no, I'm kidding. But George Mason fifth, I think they could win the league. I've already said it on this podcast. I just have a few too many questions about their defense and point guard position, but so much talent, and they also have a player of the year candidate in Oduro. Loyola Chicago sixth. I think they just need a second all-conference player, and I'm not sure they have it other than Braden Norris. And I think you hit the nail on the head with defense being their claim to fame recently. It seems like it's going to take a big hit unless someone we're not expecting makes a huge jump. I had UMass seventh, and overall, just the lack of continuity makes it tough to judge. Like, I think Rashul Diggins could be a superstar, or Wilton Slovac, or Matt Cross, or whoever, or Tafara Gapare, too, is one of the highest rated freshmen in the conference. And we got confirmation that he's going to be eligible to start the season. So the talent is there. I just wonder how it's all going to come together. I want to apologize for this next pick. I have Rhode Island eighth, and at the beginning of the offseason and throughout the summer, I had Rhodey as a sneaky double bye contender, but losing Anthony Harris is just a killer, and I'm not sure if he's going to be back for conference play or not. We haven't really heard much.
sounds like it's trending towards no at this point.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because I think he really could have raised the ceiling. And the more I looked at it, I don't love the roster. I think having Archie Miller is what keeps them in the middle of the pack for me. And then nine, I have Richmond, which I feel bad picking the Spiders this low, but I feel like what you have to remember, like we remember how they finished the season, which was incredible. They finished sixth place, though, in the regular season, and they really weren't that great of a team until March. So do we think they're going to finish the same or higher without Jacob Gilliard and Grant Golden, plus the others they lost? I don't think so.
I just think that their role guys are better this year. And then, like I said, it's basically a bet on Burton.
Yeah, and
If
I
Burton's a
saw.
legit player of the year candidate, they're going to finish like fifth, sixth, seventh. So.
See, that's my problem. The role guys, like, I think Burton's going to be great at putting up stats, and I think Jason Nelson's the rookie of the year, but I don't really like the rest of the team very much, and that's why I have them at nine.
All right, I'll go into my next grouping because I have my Rhode Island thoughts in there. I already talked about my rationale for Duquesne at nine. I'm going to take Fordham at 10.
Ooh.
And it's been a kind of a fun little roller coaster with them where everyone sees them finish eighth last year. And the early sentiment around the Twitterverse in the summer was, oh, they're just going to be right back in the middle again. And we both saw that and said, well, no, they lose two insanely important guys. We're gonna zig. We're throwing them like squarely in the pillow fight. And then all the smart people started doing their A10 projections, and they all have Fordham like 13th, 14th, 15th. I think three man, we've had them dead last. I'm zagging back now. I'm in. Like I said, this team is just gonna be way more athletic than they ever have been. I think Ergo's gonna keep them fired up all season. The one thing that it appears to me early on that he's going to be great at as a coach is just galvanizing his team. And I just think they're going to be decent this year. And then Rhode Island at 11th, that's their floor for the level of talent they have. But as much as I love Breon Freeman, like this was a pillow fight team last year in a smaller pillow fight with a really bad bottom of the league. Yes, they bring in Freeman, but he replaces the only good shooter they had last year in Shepherd. And now they trade the Mitchell twins to the SEC and bring back one center. And the rest of the roster is still like kind of the same. So unless there's some incredible freshman that I'm missing here, I just feel like the Archie Miller thing pays off next year in terms of results. This is a multi-year building thing for them. I just don't think they're that good this year.
That's fair. And I still think Rhode Island, like even if they're bad this year, I think they could be in the tournament, next year or 2 years from now, just having Archie. But those are fair points. I'll go on to my next tier, which all four of these are very close, 10 through 13. I have Duquesne 10th, so I think the second highest out of everybody behind you. Fran Dunphy did not come out of retirement to finish below 11th place, so that's where the Explorers are going to go. And I do think, we hyped up Khalil Brantley quite a bit last time, but I think he's a big breakout pick. I think having the Drames is going to make them a competent defense. St. Bonaventure 12th, which that's the pick that I'm pretty sure I'm going to get burned on. And I'm also, this should have been a hot take. I think St. Bonaventure is the last couple of years it's been LaSalle. This year, St. Bonaventure is going to be the team that ruins somebody's season as a Q4 loss, because
Oh yeah,
that
I
is a
like that
lock.
pick.
In fact, they are going to have a disastrous non-conference. They're probably losing to, who is it, St. Francis PA? I mean, they're probably going to lose. And, somebody is going to make that cold trip to the Riley Center in February, and it's going to be a shame when someone's net goes from 40 to 62 after a brutal loss. And I'm not high on the Bonnies, although I still think I could get burned and they finish like seventh. I just don't think it's an A-10 quality roster. All their transfers, except for Amadison from Pitt, which maybe you include him too, but they all just came from really bad teams last year.
Pitt
And
was a
then
bad team last year.
they were, but they're still in the ACC. Like, compared to St. Bonaventure's other guys coming from Hartford and Fairleigh Dickinson and Holy Cross, like, those are all teams that would finish last in the A-10. And then 13th, I have St. Joe's. I don't think they're quite in the bottom tier. I think the talent's just there. And I know I had some kind words on Billy Lang, but I also just can't pick St. Joe's much higher than that and keep a straight face based on what we've seen.
Yeah, and I got a little sidetracked. I had Bonaventure at 12 in that last tier of teams. I think they're a bottom tier roster. I can't put them in the bottom tier so long as Mark Schmidt still breathes on that bench. So, my closing tier, it's tough. I guess I'm just going LaSalle at 13. I don't like the roster. I think we've seen enough from those guards to just kind of believe at this point that they are who they are. Especially with Brickus and Nickelberry. I just don't see either of them finally having that breakout. Maybe Brantley does. I'm putting them 13 just because of Fran Dunphy. I'll take St. Joe's 14. The talent's sneaky good in the backcourt, where either Winborn or Reynolds could be a star. I really like Lynn Greer. I think he is an A-10 caliber starting point guard. But I just have so many questions at the forward spots and on the bench. And I just think there's only so much Obina is going to be able to do to hold things together at that point. And then GW at 15, where it's basically just the more extreme of what I talked about with Rhode Island. I don't think Chris Caputo is walking into this job to fix George Washington in 1 year. This is a multi-year plan. And they just got another big commitment earlier today. We're recording this on Monday. They're putting together a really nice recruiting class for next year. And I think this year is just the closeout of the James Bishop show. And maybe Lindo bounces back or Maximus Edwards is awesome, but it's just not going to be a good year for George Washington. And I think the best case scenario for them is Caputo just comes out of this year with two or three really strong keepers. And he can start to put together his roster next year. There's like weirdly a lot of guys back for GW.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's going to be a process for Caputo, but hopefully he can get things going in Foggy Bottom. So we both zigged. You zagged. I didn't zag though. I still have Fordham 14th. And
They might
but
not be able to score this year at all, so.
well, that's the problem. They were like 310 in KenPom offense last year. I just think going back, you could make the case Chubo Hams was the most important player for a team last year because I simply think that he allowed Fordham to beat up on the bad teams of the A-10. Nobody could stop him from getting double-digit rebounds. He had so many putbacks every game. I just don't think they're going to get nearly the same production out of the center spot. And also, just I know they were a feel-good story last year. They were still 173 overall. Like, it wasn't that great of a team. And I still think long-term, Fordham's in a much better spot than they were with Jeff Neubauer, but they lose a lot from last year. And then 15 is GW, which I actually do feel like this is too low. And I don't really think they're going to finish last, but I think I'm just the least excited about George Washington out of all the other teams. But I do think their experience is going to end up providing some benefit. Bishop, Adams, Amir Harris, all seniors. So maybe that gives Coach Caputo something to work with in year one. And I really just don't see as much upside, though, unless we see Maximilian Edwards from Kansas State breaking out and having a big year.
I think they were hurtling towards the basement at rapid speed last year. And then putting Freeman in the starting lineup basically saved their season and helped wake up Bamisil. Those two guys were the reason why they had missed the pillow fight last year, and now they're gone.
Yeah. Probably right, but there we go. So not too many differences. I mean, we're pretty apart on Richmond and Fordham, I guess. Otherwise, I feel like we're not. And Rhode Island, I guess I like them
Yeah.
quite a bit more than you. But I don't think we got too spicy. We're both much lower on Loyola than the official poll, but I feel like a lot of people are.
And we are both way higher on VCU. Even though it's just one spot, I mean, we both have them over a consensus like national top 30 team. So,
Yeah, that's true.
right, you want to
So
close it with the last over under?
I think we have to. So, the elephant in the room, we've talked about some great teams in the A-10. And with our name, it's only appropriate. I'm going to set it over under 2.5 bids because I don't think it's fair to go higher than that when it's been under 4 years in a row.
In the last few, I pick over every year, but the last few years, it's always some crazy convoluted bid thief scenario that I throw out there. This year, it's over, and I think it's pretty easy. Dayton is a top 25 team in the country. I have no doubt in saying that.
Well, they are right now.
This is, I think this is the best team preseason projection wise, in my mind, that we've had in the 5 years of this pod. Because remember, the 2020 team was like coming into the year, we basically thought that they'd be a little bit better than a bubble team.
They received one top 25 vote, and it was from an Alabama writer who probably did as a favor to Anthony Grant. They had no hype that year.
Yeah, I mean, we knew they'd be good, but nowhere near that good. I think they're the best team coming into the season that we've had in the 5 years of this pod. They're going to cruise in, like I said. St. Louis, I think, is going to do great work against an insanely tough non-conference schedule. If they can go 10-3 and then finish in the top four of the conference, they're in easily. I think that's what happens. I think they have a few shaky moments in A-10 play, but they still find their way into a top 10 seed easily. VCU, that defense is just going to carry them to enough big wins that they get in. Somewhere in that same range as St. Louis, the 7-10 zone. And then if we want to talk about a potential fourth, it's Davidson or George Mason that Saturday in Brooklyn. We know Dayton doesn't win the A-10 tournament. I think this year might continue to follow that trend where they could be like a 4, 5, 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. Lose the A-10 semifinals, and then at that point, for Davidson or Mason, all of a sudden you're in a coin flip game for with a chance to steal a bid on Sunday. So that's where I see the flex spot being. The last few years, the flex spot's been at 3. This year, I think it's at 4.
I hope so. And I don't think we need to talk about any more why VCU, Dayton, and St. Louis can all get a bid. Like, we all know they could
They
be
should all
great.
expect to this year.
I think so. I think that's fair, but we also know from watching the A10 that it's not uncommon for teams we think are going to be really good to not be that good. And it doesn't always happen. Like, you go back to 2017 when Dayton, VCU, and Rhode Island were all the clear favorites, and they all had great seasons. Maybe that happens again. To me, I look at it, I think we're getting two at-large bids, and then it's going to come down to a bid thief. And since we never get nice things, I'm going to say that, I mean, we know Dayton's not winning the A10 tournament. If we're right on one thing in this podcast, that's it. I'm going to say I think Dayton gets an at-large, and then between like VCU and St. Louis, someone else gets an at-large and wins the tournament. I think we'll get two bids, and it's going to be March Sadness all over again. I just can't take three when it hasn't happened, and I hope I'm wrong. But I also think I've picked over every year too. So maybe if this is the year I'm finally wrong, that's a good
Well, we're
thing.
going to just average it out because my official pick is four
Oh.
when Matt McKillop bid thieves in his rookie year.
That could happen too, and that would be amazing.
Behind a 30-12 game from Sam Mininka in the final.
Here's my question to you, because we've pretty much narrowed it down to three favorites, but last year Davidson, after getting picked sixth, won the league. How many teams do you think realistically could win the A10 regular season this year? Because I feel like I could come up with six, depending on how liberal you get.
So this is where it gets funny because I like the middle way more than you, and I think the answer might actually just be three.
Oh, no
Because I
way.
think one of these three just ends up being flat out awesome this year. Like one of them's going like 16-2.
I don't think so. I think the A10 is overall the only time anyone goes 16-2 is if it's like a legit top 10 team. Or if the A10 just stinks, like when VCU went 16-2 a few years ago.
Well, and if I'm stretching it out, it's five. Because it
We'll
could
see.
be Davidson again. And there's a universe where Mason just simply has the best offense in the conference. If Dinkins and Singleton are really good and Oduro can space the floor next year, like they could have the best offense, they could have an average defense. And that's exactly what Davidson did last year, and they won the conference.
Well, I think so. And I think for, well, yeah, Mason, we know their offense could be tremendous. I mean, Davidson did it last year. Why can't they do it again? And then as a wild card, I think I'm going to say UMass just because of the talent and the coach. Maybe Frank Martin pulls it all together and they go 14-4. I don't want to get that thought into UMass fans' heads because it's probably not going to happen. But, you know, if Diggins and Cross and Gapare are all like all conference guys out of nowhere? You just never know. Maybe TJ Weeks, we haven't said his name yet. He could score 18 a game this year.
My final sentence to this preview. In the wild, wild, wild alternative universe where UMass wins the A10, it's exactly what we talked about. Fernandes is the triple nickel god. Either Matt Cross or Rashul Diggins just turns out to be a star in a mid-major. But there has to be a third piece, and that third piece is TJ Weeks finally fulfilling his destiny. Becoming an all-conference player and letting me pay off on all the property that I still have in TJ Weeks' archipelago.
Hope so, man. Especially in this market, you need to close out that position after this year. All
Right, you got
right.
a closing thought? Because that's mine.
It's going to be a fun year. That's my thought. I just can't wait for things to get started. I guess my closing thought, like 2 weeks from now, a lot of what we just said is going to look silly. You know, once the games get played and you see box scores and somebody gets brutality. I guess my thought is let's not overreact this year because I think every season, you know, someone takes a bad loss. Somebody takes three bad losses occasionally and everyone panics. But Just enjoy the season. Don't freak out when your team loses a bad game because it's going to be such a fun year.
Yeah, let's not overreact when the Malachi list Dayton just has a complete dud against either SMU or UNLV.
Or Mendenwood, maybe.
That's not happening again. Holmes might have 50 after what happened in those bye games last year.
I think
They're gonna
this year.
seriously, they're gonna come out for blood in that game. They might win by 40, by 40 to 45.
Anybody that like talks about Dayton or VCU or SLU though, about them being dead for at-large chances in November, they might just get blocked this year. We might be hitting the block button this year a lot more because
Ooh.
nobody gave VCU or Dayton a chance last year. They both went to the NIT. Dayton almost got in and nobody gave them a chance. So that's my message. If your team lays an egg early on, there's a lot of season to recover from that.
Yep. If anyone wants, they could go back and listen to our episode after Thanksgiving
Oh,
when
it was
after
sad. Oh, that one
no.
was happy.
After
The
the
one before was
Miami game,
sad.
when I
Yeah.
tried to convince everyone that they were still alive.
Yeah,
That
that's
was
right.
even before Kansas that that happened.
Yeah.
But that does it for our longest pod of the preseason and the early season. Our culmination preview here. If you missed them, please go back, listen to all four episodes of the team previews. Go back and listen to our interviews with Keith Dambrot and Kim English, talk about their teams. Two very insightful episodes with those coaches. If you've enjoyed these, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Please be sure to send us questions when we start our mailbag. I'm sure we'll be doing one at some point in November once the season gets rolling. Everybody enjoy opening day. It's going to be good. And then we got a great week of some really interesting standalone games after that that should be very enjoyable. So just enjoy.